no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on all of the Illegal Curve social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Multiple hours of Winnipeg Jets talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're so thrilled to see everybody with us on this, on our various platforms. Nice to see so many people joining us. We got people in Mexico. We got people in Morden. We got people in Regina and Calgary and all around the world. And so great to see so many of you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, as you all very well know by this point in time, joined by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We have comprehensive Jets coverage for you on this Saturday morning. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Nice to see you on the screen. Ezzy, you still need to find a barber or razors or Edward Scissorhands or anything whatsoever to clean yourself up, you absolute rabid animal.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to keep this beard going. I have no reason to. I'm just feeling like, this suits me at the moment, but maybe one day I'll have a haircut in the future. But ready to talk Jets, boys. Got another win over the Habs, and we got an epic three-gamer coming up against the Toronto Maple Leafs next week. We do, of course, have that game tonight against the Habs in Montreal. But ready to get this thing going again.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day, no doubt about it. Anytime it's a Winnipeg Jets game day and it's a Saturday morning, you know that those things go together so well. Dave, good to see you. People already in the chat are talking about your repping your Pittsburgh Pirates hat after last week. I believe it was the Dodgers, if I'm not mistaken.
It was. I'm on a baseball kick right now. So we've got I've gone Jays, Dodgers, and now Pittsburgh.
Well, when are you pulling out the House of A hat? That's the real question. Dave and I play on the same softball team. As he once played on the team, but he was asked to leave the team shortly thereafter.
Yeah,
it wasn't very good. Remember when Rabbi Matt Leibel went on his famous tour of all of the baseball parks with my.
Speaking of also another not very good baseball player.
Yeah, no. But with my great uncle,
you're gonna get smoken with that kind of comment about a man of God.
I think I'm okay.
And you think you're okay? You're not too concerned about that?
I was just going to say, Dave, Matt Leibel's favorite ballpark was in Pittsburgh. I remember that. I don't even know what the ballpark is called, but that was his favorite one.
PNC Park, as he.
There you go. Yeah.
It used to be called Three Rivers, right?
That was the old stadium and then the new stadium. The old stadium, PNC. which had no view of the rivers. Yeah. This new stadium is right on, the Allegheny. I don't know what the other rivers are in Pittsburgh.
I don't know. Allegheny, for sure.
Allegheny is the only one I'm going to know that I can say confidently. We'll have to ask some of our Pittsburgh friends about that, or we can talk about the Winnipeg Jets. It's really up to the people. You know, what do you want? We can either keep talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates, or we can talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Your choice, guys. Really, let us know in the chat what you want to hear. Of course, the Illegal Curve question of the day, let's put that up on the screen so that everybody can see it and can respond accordingly. The Illegal Curve question of the day for this Saturday morning: is next week's three-game series versus division-leading Toronto a measuring stick series for the Jets, or the same as any other three games in the regular season? We'll talk about that throughout the course of the show, of course, and then we want you guys to chime in throughout whatever platform you're using to watch this, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, we're all available. We want to hear your comments throughout the morning as well. Okay, gentlemen, let's get started talking about the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. We know it was a busy week. Since we were on last Saturday, they played four games. They won three out of those four games. Of course, beating the Montreal Canadiens twice in overtime, losing to the Vancouver Canucks, and then bouncing back to beat the Canucks on Tuesday night by that 5-2 margin. Game five of the week, of course, comes tonight as the Jets are going to be in Montreal again for the second game in this two-game set. So what do you make of the Jets' week that was so far, guys?
Yeah, well, they absolutely own the Montreal Canadiens right now. As you mentioned, especially in overtime, you know, it's the reverse for the Habs. The Jets haven't lost a game in overtime, whereas the Habs haven't won a game in overtime. But, the game against the Vancouver Canucks that they lost was, very disheartening. But pardon me, they lost the game. It's hard for me to remember all the games that were this week.
That
they
was
lost
the 4-0 game on Monday night against Vancouver. Probably the worst, I would say, one of the worst games of the year for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right. I had to do a double check there, boys, because, you know, they've been only playing the Canucks and the Habs. But, you know, coming off of that really disappointing loss to the Canucks, you know, the game against the Habs was maybe, you know, one of the more impressive efforts. I'm talking about the game on Thursday night, of course. And, you know, the Jets, I thought, deserved the clean 2 points. And, you know, obviously the late goal, that's unfortunate. But, you know, the Jets, we know that, you know, they go with the three forwards in overtime. And obviously, you know, an unfortunate, you know, little miscommunication between Jeff Petrie and Joel Armia gives, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois the ability to have a little open room there in the Habs zone and, you know, pop in the rolling puck winner over the shoulder of Jake Allen. But, you know, overall, I mean, you mentioned, Drew, 3 wins out of 4. And, you know, guys, the last couple of weeks, some of the games aren't the prettiest games. But, you know, they're getting these points and they're second place in the North Division. And, you know, we all look at the numbers and you can see that, you know, the expected goals in some of these games are not favoring the Jets, even though they did on Thursday night against the Montreal Canadiens. But they're finding ways to win. And, you know, when they go to overtime right now, you're almost expecting them to win because of how much success they've had. So, you know,
5-0 on the year in overtime, to your point there, Ezzy. It's a good record in the 3-on-3 overtime, and it's hard to, you know, from my perspective, it's sort of hard to take a ton of stock out of overtime because it's such a different game than the regulation time. But, you know, the rules are the rules, and the Jets are certainly taking advantage of it, getting those 5 victories in OT so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's no reason to think that Paul Maurice won't continue to go with 3 forwards. I mean, you could see Josh Morrissey or Neil Pionk out there, but you're having a lot of success with it. And you wonder how many teams are going to copycat the Jets, right? Because, you know, whether it's a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs or, you know, maybe the Tampa Bay Lightning or even the Vegas Golden Knights. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could roll 3 forwards in overtime, not just those teams, but no, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Jets are making sure that they stay ahead of the rest of the pack right now. It's, you know, the Jets, Toronto, and Edmonton, and then it's basically the rest of the North Division. But, you know, I thought with the exception of that second period, guys, on Thursday night, you know, this was the Jets game. And, you know, they easily could have had, you know, another couple goals in regulation. I thought Jake Allen was really good, and they obviously controlled the overtime. So, you know, I thought that was overall a really impressive game. But you have to think that this is going to be a much more desperate Montreal team tonight. I mean, they don't want to lose 2 in a row on their home ice. We know that the Canadians have been in a bad stretch here the last 2 or 3 weeks. So I expect this game to be a lot sharper from the Canadians' perspective.
You know what? To me, the fact is the Jets are banking the points. And so, yes, it's obviously not pretty sometimes, some of these victories, but at the end of the day, the whole point is that you got to make sure that you're giving yourself that opportunity to have some space between you and 3 and 4, right? Because a lot of people were picking the Jets to be fighting for that kind of fourth and finals playoff spot. Well, a lot of what they've done now has put them into a position. I think they're 7-2-0 in their last 9 games. So you've put yourself into a position to, you know, allow yourself to have some latitude, you know, with what you do with the lineup. They've been lucky. They've been fairly, you know, injury free, which is a good thing for them. It allows them to send some of their guys down to the Moose, get those young prospects playing as opposed to being up with the taxi squad. And I think, you know, is it a critical 3-game series against the Leafs? I mean, yeah, I mean, we saw with the Oilers, right? We saw what happened with Edmonton, and folks are saying you don't want that to happen again. It'd be shocking if the Jets didn't, you know, compete against Toronto, but we'll see. I guess to me, that's kind of the focus is how are you, that's your measuring stick game, right? The Leafs are 7 points ahead of the Jets. They've played 2 more games, but that's going to be your biggest measuring stick. Montreal, you know, for all everybody was talking about Montreal a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, as this juggernaut, you know, team, we can see what can happen. Now, the one thing about the Jets, and we've talked about it consistently, they have it, speaking of consistent, they've been consistent in the sense that they haven't had a huge losing streak, you know? And so much like the Leafs, the Jets have been able to avoid that. And I think that's been key. And to me, going into this series, I'm not looking past Montreal because obviously you want to win this game and it's important to play it. I think the fact is that you've got to look at that, you know, when we're going back to the IC question of the day, you have to look at that series as a bit of a measuring stick. I don't think it's going to make or break the season, but it's definitely a bit of a measuring stick because right now Toronto seems to be the toast of the North.
There's no question. And I mean, to your point, Dave, we don't obviously want to overlook the tonight's game. I mean, the Jets want to keep the good momentum going. And I mean, they, you know, the game that they played on Thursday night, the first period was as good of a first period as we've seen. And then you knew the Habs were going to push back in the second period, but to do so in the manner that they did, and for the Jets to look as poor as they did in the second period, sort of maybe provides a bit of a shock to the system and a bit of a, almost a wake-up call saying that, yes, you have to keep playing as well as you did. You can't all of a sudden rest on your laurels, because the minute that they rest on their laurels, or the minute that they don't have the same pushback that they had in the first 20 minutes, then what happens is the Habs tie the game at 2. Now, the Jets were fortunate, of course, to end up getting the 2 points in overtime, and you know, they played a better third period after that second period, but you know, this is another important game tonight. You want to feel good about yourself heading into Toronto for the 3-game series, but you can't overlook tonight because all of us, you know, the Jets aren't a good enough team to overlook any opponent, no matter how poor that opponent may have been playing as of late. We saw that on Monday against Vancouver, where the Canucks absolutely, I mean, they took the Jets and dominated a game by a 4-0 margin, where the Jets really didn't even seem to have anything in their tank at all.
Yeah, the Jets are not going to overlook the Canadiens tonight. And, you know, a few more things from that game on Thursday night. I thought that was maybe, you know, Matthew Perreault, Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis's best game of the season as the fourth line. I mean, we know that, you know, the fourth line oftentimes this year, you know, hasn't been maybe used as much as we would like to see. And, you know, we thought maybe Jansen Harkins was going to be, you know, more of a staple of that fourth line. But obviously, you know, Nate Thompson comes back from his injury. You know, he did score that goal, winning goal against the Habs last week. But especially, you know, Matty Perreault, goals in back-to-back games. And, you know, Paul Stastny obviously, you know, had a tremendous game, you know, the 2 goals. And, you know, he just continues to excel kind of quietly, right? Like Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, like they're getting Neil Pionk. They're getting a lot of the, you know, the headlines, and they should. They're all having great seasons. But, you know, Paul Stastny has been a quiet leader of this team. And, you know, I think another thing to, you know, point out against Montreal is, you know, you wonder if Carey Price is going to come in tonight, kind of a little bit of redemption, boys, you know, for the way he played against the Jets last game. We remember he let in 5 goals against the Jets. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Carey Price is between the pipes. Not saying that Jake Allen was bad by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know if he had
If it's not Carey Price for the Habs tonight, then I think they've almost got a bit of a controversy going on in goal. Anytime you're not going to see Carey Price on in 2 consecutive games, it's going to be a talking point. So I would, to your point, Ezzy, I would be shocked if it's not Carey Price. And I would expect Carey Price to be better than he was against the Jets last week. Because he was terrible, to be frank. Well,
and he wasn't bad in his last game against the Ottawa Senators. He only allowed 1 goal. So he was very solid. I think he had something like 23 saves. So it's not like he had 40 saves or anything like that, but he was certainly much better against the Senators than he was against the Jets. And of course you would say, well, you know, he was going up against the Senators, but you know, we've seen the Senators upset a bunch of teams in this North Division, boys. So I agree. I mean, I do expect it to be Carey Price. I don't think I would be shocked if it wasn't Carey Price, just because, you know, if you look at it right now, boys, I mean, it's kind of a timeshare situation in Montreal. I mean, Carey Price is always going to be the number one goaltender, but with the way Jake Allen has played, you know, you expect them to kind of split the starts here. But yeah, Drew, I do think there's a good chance it's Price tonight.
You know, and for the Jets' perspective, I mean, you have tonight's game, of course, against the Habs, and then you go to Toronto. And you know, I was sort of surprised that we didn't see any lineup changes to speak of for the forwards at all this week. I mean, we saw obviously Tucker Poolman come back into the lineup and Sammy Niku depart the lineup, and that wasn't a surprise. But I thought you might see Jansen Harkins at some point this week, and we haven't seen him, and I'd be surprised if we saw him tonight. So if you're Jansen Harkins, you have to wonder what it's going to take for you to get back into the lineup. It seems like it's going to either be an injury or maybe a couple of games of a poor performance by one of the veterans on the fourth line. And that, you know, if you're Jansen Harkins coming off of a very good year last year, and you've been sort of in and out of the lineup all year so far this year, you have to be a little frustrated, I think, at this point in time, Dave.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that, to your point, Drew, that the reality for Jansen Harkins is he's only coming in if there's an injury, or I guess we talked about it before, as the schedule starts to condense in March and the Jets are playing more games, perhaps you throw him in when you want to give Nate Thompson a night off after a back-to-back. But to me, that's probably your biggest question mark, because who else is he coming in for? He's not coming in for Matthew Perreault. He's not coming in for Trevor Lewis. He's not coming in for anybody on the third line. So the reality for Jansen Harkins right now, and that's just something, you know, it's unfortunate for him that he's had injuries this season, right? Yeah. Because to your point, he had such a good, you know, last year with the Jets that you really thought he was going to keep it rolling. And again, you know, I've watched this kid work his butt off really to continue to get to that next level in his development. So, you know, he's biding his time and waiting. And I think that's just part of the reality. I think that Paul Maurice wants Nate Thompson in the lineup. People might not like it. Like, people constantly are criticizing it, and they're entitled to, but the reality is, like, ultimately Paul Maurice is the one who's going to make that lineup decision. And he wants Nate Thompson in the lineup. He wants him to, you know, presumably win faceoffs and have that veteran presence. And I think that's just the reality of the Winnipeg Jets. You might not like it. You might not agree with it. You might want to see David Gustafson in the lineup. You might want to see Jansen Harkins in the lineup. But, you know, ultimately the guy who makes the lineup is the coach, and the coach is going with a veteran like Nate Thompson. So to answer your question, Drew, I don't think Jansen Harkins is coming in unless, again, there's an injury, or if there's a situation where, like I said, you want to get some fresh legs in. Because that's kind of, to me, that's kind of the advantage of the taxi squad, is you have that ability to kind of get some guys in, especially for veteran guys. Give them a night off, get a young guy in, because we saw with David Gustafson yesterday, he didn't play for a month. His last game for the Jets was February 4th, and his first game after that last Jets game was last night for the Manitoba Moose. So, and he said, he admitted that he was tired. You know, he didn't have his kind of game shape. And that to me is a concern, because that's what the point of the taxi squad is to get these guys in and have them playing at a game shape level. So if you need them, you can get them into that lineup. So to me, the biggest key, I think, is allowing, again, you're not taking him out for anybody in the top nine, so that's not even an issue right now. But it's that fourth line. Can you get him into a game on a back-to-back, pull Thompson out, give him a night off to rest and recover, and then throw Jansen Harkins in? Again, that's, to me, an advantage to your team, because, again, if someone goes down with injury, you want him to not have had 2 months off. But I just think, like, it'll be a benefit to this team.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. No, you know, just wanted to throw in a few things here. And, you know, nobody wants to see Jansen Harkins, you know, not playing. I mean, first and foremost, I think, you know, that's kind of what we're all saying here. But the other thing is, you know, going back to that game Thursday night, you know, that was the best, I think. I mean, you know, eye test analytics, I know the possession was really good. You know, when you're talking about Thompson, Lewis, and Perreault, that was arguably, in my opinion, you know, their best game of the season. So, you know, that's going against Harkins here. But you're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, you don't want to be out of the lineup for a couple of weeks. And, you know, with the Jets winning three of their last four games, you know, six of their last seven games, you know, you know that Paul Maurice is most likely, you know, going to go with the, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? So,
yeah,
you know, we expect Harkins back in the lineup at some point. I thought there was a good chance, you know, that he was going to get into one of those back-to-back games, especially, I think, you know, Drew, what you were getting at is, you know, after the Jets lost that game to the Canucks, which I forgot about off the top of the show, I forgot if it was the Canucks or the Habs that beat the Jets, because they only seem to be playing two teams here, but you know, I thought Harkins might get into that second game, but you know that Maurice wants to get him in, and it's just a question of numbers. And I think Dave is 100% right. He's the Moose insider, and he knows that Christian Vesalainen and David Gustafson, that was the right call. We were talking about that last week. You know, David Gustafson won a big faceoff, Dave. I believe that was the first Moose goal that CJC scored. Gustafson won the faceoff. So that's what you want to see. You want to see your, you know, 19-year-old prospects playing in games for the Moose. You know, he can play with Cole Perfetti, he can play with Ville Heinola, and, you know, depending on what happens, you know, he can get maybe a call up from the Jets later in the season.
You're exactly right there, Ezzy. I mean, they need to be in the lineup and playing games, and it'll be nothing but beneficial for them. Moose winners last night in Belleville, 4-1, Dave, did I get the score right?
No, and it was in Ottawa, 3-1.
Sorry, but they were playing against Ottawa. They're playing against Belleville in Ottawa.
That's right.
Come on, Drew, you should know that. You lived there.
Yes, I know, but that doesn't mean that I necessarily keep track of who's playing where or which AHL affiliate's necessarily playing where right now. But
anyways, just answer the question. They did win, and David Gustafson played. Christian Vesalainen did not play. He was listed as day-to-day. And so they're playing again. The Moose are playing again this afternoon. So we'll see if Vesalainen is available for the game. And that will end the 8-game homestand. And then, folks, Moose are back home for 17 straight games in Winnipeg, playing at the Iceplex. If I'm still alive at the end of April, it'll be a miracle. But yeah, the Moose will be playing 17 straight in Winnipeg.
Never mind alive. If your significant other is still talking to you by the end of April, then that'll be equally impressive nonetheless. You know, let me quickly about the 3-on-3 and Paul Maurice's deployment of forwards at the three forwards at 3-on-3. I mean, obviously it's worked. They got five wins in overtime so far this season. Do you have any problem with that strategy, or are you sort of embracing the balls to the wall, go for it, aggressive strategy that we're seeing from Paul Maurice in overtime?
Balls to the wall, baby, and it's working, right? And I think it works especially for the type of team the Jets are, the amount of skill that they have, and also where they are in the standings. I don't necessarily know that Paul Maurice is doing this because they're, in second place and have this big cushion over teams like the Canucks and the Flames. Like, let's be honest, guys, the Canucks and the Flames, they have an uphill battle here to make the playoffs. Like, right now, even the Habs are in a pretty good position in front of those teams when you consider, the games played, especially with Vancouver, right? So the Jets are comfortably, I would say, you guys would agree with that, in a playoff spot. So I don't necessarily know that factors in that much, but for me it does. And when you can put out forwards that have the skill level, but also are very good defensively. Like, I realize we've talked about, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and how they have their defensive shortcomings, but I don't feel nervous at all with any of the forwards that Paul Maurice is putting out there. Like, whether it's Pierre-Luc Dubois, whether it's Kyle Connor, Nikolai Ehlers, like, these are all ultra talented forwards who have lots of skill. They can make plays, they can shoot the puck. So I don't think that there should be any concern at all if Paul Maurice continues to do this. And you're going for that bonus point anyways, so why not be aggressive? And that's what I like, boys. That's what I think, should be the main takeaway here. Not just the wins, which are obviously the most important thing, but Paul Maurice and the coaching staff are being aggressive. They're saying, like, no, we're not going to just, sit back and hope that maybe we score in overtime and then finish it off in the shootout. By putting three forwards out there, they're thinking offense first, shoot first. We want to take this point, and I like that.
And it's also hard to argue with a team that's now gone 5-0 in overtime, right? So if you're nitpicking and criticizing, then you're really a perfectionist, because, Drew, it's hard to argue, right? It's hard to argue with success, and obviously you can sometimes point out, but it's difficult. To your point earlier, like, overtime is not a real thing, obviously, because it's not something that you see in the playoffs. So again, employ a strategy that works. They've obviously found something that they like and that they're having success with. And when you look at that Jets top nine, and again, like I said, that's one thing we've tried to get away from, is the idea of just referencing a top six. When you look at that Jets top nine, they can score and they can control the puck. And that's what you need to do in overtime. Really, that's the key, is having possession. So that's something that group is talented. You don't really need the defense to do. I mean, obviously you can throw Pionk if you need him, or Morrissey if you need him. But ideally, when you've got Ehlers, Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, Kopp, Appleton, those are all guys who can go out and just control play, and that's what you want to do. So I think that their strategy has worked. I think, and again, it's something that we talk about. Once you find something, you generally stick with it, right? Especially in hockey. So I don't suspect that the Jets are going to do anything other than what they've done for the remainder of the season.
And frankly, if you lose in overtime, I don't know how upset you really ever are about the coaching decisions that are made. If the Jets are aggressive and it ends up biting them, a little bit in the behind every now and then, I think for the most part, being aggressive is going to pay off in the end rather than not. I mean, and so again, I like the aggressiveness from a coach who often is very conservative and who doesn't necessarily deploy his players in an aggressive manner. Typically, look at the offensive talent the Jets have, in their lineup. You might as well try and swarm teams with it. And for the most part, I think you're going to end up on the right side of the ledger, as opposed to if you sort of tried to play the traditional 1D, 2 forwards. I went back and looked on Thursday night, the only defenseman to see any ice time during the longer, I mean, it was a longer overtime period than we've seen was Neil Pionk. I think he got about, let me look at my notes here. He got about 50 seconds of play, 58 seconds along with Matthew Perreault and Andrew Kopp in overtime on Thursday night. And other than that, it was three forwards the whole way through.
Yeah, and I think another thing to point out, guys, about the three-on-three overtime is I think if you're going up against Edmonton, for example, who can put Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl out there, I think Paul Maurice might be, you know, a little bit more reluctant to go three forwards, and he might want to have Josh Morrissey out there, Neil Pionk, simply for the fact that, you know, when you're talking about Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, those guys are so dangerous that you might want to rethink going with the three forwards. That's only the thing I would say about that. Or maybe against the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? Like if you're going up against Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews, it's man to man, right? Like Paul Maurice has mentioned this. You know, Jeff Hamilton of the Free Press asked him about it after the game on Thursday night, and he said, yeah, for the most part, it's man to man. You know, in certain situations, you want to play zone. But so that's one thing I would throw out there. If the Jets go against the Leafs or the Oilers in overtime, that wouldn't surprise me if the Jets go back to the traditional, you know, one defenseman, two forwards.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, Matthew Perreault is obviously having a tremendous year for the Winnipeg Jets so far. I think a lot of people, and I'm going to admit first and foremost, I'm one of them. I thought the Jets might look to move on from him, thought that maybe he might have been a buyout candidate given how poor last year was and even the last couple of years. Obviously looks like he's been hooked up to the rejuvenation machine with his performance this year. Could you now foresee a circumstance where the Jets are looking to maybe re-sign Matthew Perreault? Again, the expansion draft factors in here. The Jets have to have two forwards under contract who meet the expansion draft parameters for the Seattle Kraken. And based on my reading, it looks like they're going to have to re-sign, you know, at least one of Perreault, Thompson, or Lewis. And that depends on what happens with Jansen Harkins. I think Harkins needs another 10 games in order to be exposed by the Jets and to meet the criteria.
Right. So there's obviously go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, do you think the Jets now, as a result of that, might be in the market to re-sign a guy like Matthew Perreault?
Absolutely. If you're asking me, you know, based on his play this year, you know, should the Jets re-sign Perreault? Absolutely. And you're going to get him for much less than he's making this year. We know that, right? Like, that was one of the big reasons, guys, why the Jets placed Matthew Perreault on waivers was because of that salary. You know that the Jets didn't want to place him on waivers. And obviously, you know, he cleared. And he's been fantastic. You know, we've talked about it, goals in back-to-back games. What is he up to? 5 goals, I believe, on the season. So, you know, he's having a great year. And that's the type of player. If you've got Matty Perreault, Frenchie on your fourth line, I mean, that's going to be a really solid fourth line. Obviously, it depends who else is out there. And, you know, we've talked about Jansen Harkins, you know, being a guy that we'd like to see on the fourth line. But, you know, Nate Thompson, Trevor Lewis, that LA Kings connection has been working, right? Like, that line has been producing some nice results. So I think if you're able to get Perreault at a nice cap hit, absolutely. And you know, Drew, you mentioned the expansion draft ramifications. You know, obviously, you know, the Jets have their own plans in terms of who they're going to protect and who they need to sign to possibly expose. But, you know, that might be something that is working in Matthew Perreault's favor. And obviously they're hoping that, you know, he isn't the one that's selected by the Seattle Kraken. But absolutely, I would have absolutely no problem. He's been here for 7 years. You know, Mikey McIntyre of the Free Press is coming up, you know, next with us. And he had a nice column in the Free Press today about Matty Perreault. And he has really exceeded expectations for a guy that, you know, we thought the Jets might lose.
Yeah, I mean, that, and like I said, that's why I'm the first to say mea culpa. I thought he was done, and I thought his presence on the roster was really just taking up a roster spot for one of the young guys. And lo and behold, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a function of playing with guys like Thompson and Lewis. Even before that, you know, there was a time there where he wasn't playing on that fourth line. He was still playing with, you know, Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton when the lineups were, and the roster was a little bit juggled there. But, you know, he just looks like he's playing, and he's a matchup problem for any team that's throwing out their fourth line, because Matthew Perreault, a guy with that kind of skill for the Jets, is a problem when you play against another team's opponents. We've seen how adept he is at knocking down pucks. We know how adept he is on the forecheck, and he's now turning that into positives as opposed to so many times in the past couple years where, you know, he'd be too aggressive on the forecheck, and it would end up with a penalty, an offensive zone penalty, which is just killer, of course, Dave.
Yeah, and I think, what does he have, 2 penalty minutes this season or something like that? Like, he doesn't have a lot. So I think that's a big key, is that you're seeing a guy who's not taking a lot of penalties, and he's contributing. And, you know, for what – he's 33 years old, but the reality for me is that he's still a guy who can produce. You know, to Ezzy's point, he's got 5 goals this season. He's got 5 assists. he's contributing for you. And you know, the nice thing about Matthew Perreault is that you can really put him on in any situation. You can trust him in almost any situation, I think, you know. So I think that's a very big value add for the Jets, is that you have a guy who you're comfortable with, who you know can help produce, who's responsible. And I think, it to your point, Drew, he looks like there's a bit of a fountain of youth, and maybe that's an element of not playing as many minutes. Maybe that's an element of, you know, getting to play against weaker competition. But the fact is that right now Matthew Perreault is contributing, and he's contributing in a meaningful way. I mean, those last two games, and we talked about it. We talked about it earlier in the season. Matthew Perreault looks like a player who's just having an impact, and that is critical for the Winnipeg Jets. So I think, for my money, I think that's an important element, and that's why I said, like, for this entire lineup, when you're looking at guys, when people are like, who's going to come in, the only guy you're bringing someone in for right now is potentially is Nate Thompson. Nobody else.
And I think one important thing you're going to mention, I think an important thing to mention here, boys, I was just going to quickly say, Drew, that, you know, Matthew Perreault is healthy, right? Like last year he had, you know, problems with staying in the lineup. So Mikey McIntyre is going to join us right now, but you know, let's talk some more about Matthew Perreault, because it was a great column today, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, look, I was kind of ready to write Matthew Perreault off, like I suspect a lot of folks were before the season started. Frankly, guys, I was a little surprised that he was even still on the Jets roster when this season began. You know, there was some talk maybe they look at buying him out. I don't think a buyout ever made sense because of the, you know, the hit that they would still have to apply this season and next. The savings would have been fairly limited. Plus, you still have to replace him with someone. So the buyout didn't make sense, but a trade certainly was something that I expected. I mean, honestly, guys, that they would have taken anything, a late round draft pick, a meddling prospect, whatever. The fact is there were no takers, not at that price tag. And we kind of saw that again, right, when they put him on waivers right out of training camp just before the season started. Any team could have had Matthew Perreault as long as they were willing to pay a salary. They wouldn't have had to give anything up. All 30 teams said thanks, but no thanks. And so you figure, okay, the Jets are stuck with him. You know, what's that going to mean? Well, as it turns out, Matthew Perreault looks like a guy who really is making the most of this maybe unexpected extension of a relationship with the Jets. It's a contract year for him. I'm sure he'd like to play another few years in this league, and he looks like a guy who really is motivated. He's moving a lot better. You know, his speed has been noticeable, and he's kind of doing the things that you want from a Matthew Perreault that used to make him such a successful player.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning, little past 9:30 in the a.m. Mike's appearance on the program is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Mike, obviously the Jets have Montreal tonight in the rematch in Quebec, and then they head to Toronto for that three-game series Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday of next week. Our Illegal Curve question of the day, we want you to chime in on this one as well. Is that a measuring stick game for this Winnipeg Jets team? We heard that talk coming out of Edmonton this past week that it was a measuring stick game for the Oilers, and we know what the Leafs did to the Oilers this week in absolute destruction over those three games. So from the Jets' perspective, you know, what do you make of this week's contest?
Yeah, if that was a measuring stick for the Oilers, I don't think they make a measuring instrument that small for how little they actually showed up. I mean, they scored one goal in three games. Congratulations, I guess, on that, guys. Yeah, I mean, it is, because, you know, first of all, Toronto's the only team in the division they haven't beaten yet. Granted, they've only played them once, and that was way back the second game of the season, right, which seems like a distant memory at this point. And a lot of things were different back then, guys. I mean, Patrick Laine had that great first game, and then he got hurt. So they didn't have Laine. They didn't have the guy that's now replaced Laine in Pierre-Luc Dubois. Tucker Pullman was out with COVID. And as we know, he's now playing on the top pair. So, I mean, they were missing a top forward and a top pairing defenseman. And I think this is a team now, 25, 24 games into the season, that is a lot more comfortable in its skin than maybe it was in game two where they're just trying to figure out exactly what they have. So it is a measuring stick. And if the, you know, if the Jets want to stop the Leafs from absolutely lapping this division, this is kind of the chance to do it, right? Like, you figure if Toronto just rolls over Winnipeg next week, let's say they sweep like they did against the Oilers. I mean, the division is over at that point. Like, Toronto could start resting guys halfway through the season because nobody is catching them. So I'm really curious to see. I mean, the Jets will be going into Toronto. First of all, they're going to be well rested. They get this 2-day buffer now after tonight's game. The games are nicely spaced out. The Jets are healthy. To me, this absolutely is a let's see what these guys are made of, and you know, let's see if they're the real deal. Because at this point of the year, if you want to get out of the Canadian division, all signs point to having to go through Toronto at some point, whether that's in the first round or the second round. You're probably going to have to beat the Leafs, and you're going to have to beat them more than one time. Good chance for the Jets to get cracking at that next week.
And, you know, Mike, you know, mentioned the game against the Habs, and obviously everybody's fired up for the three games against the Leafs next week, but for the obvious reasons that you just talked about. I mean, the Leafs are just so far ahead of basically the rest of the NHL right now in the standings. And, you know, when you look at this Canadiens team, and we know that Carey Price has not been, you know, the Olympic gold medalist Carey Price that we're used to seeing, even though he was good in his last start against the Ottawa Senators. And we were talking about it right before you came on. You know, we think there's a good chance that Price does get the start tonight against the Jets. But overall, like, macro level, looking at this Canadiens team, like, to me, it's still a very talented team, still a very deep team. I still like the moves, you know, bringing in Tyler Toffoli, bringing in Josh Anderson, you know, even Corey Perry in your, you know, bottom six there. Like, is this just a team that is in a really bad funk? Is it a team that just needs a little bit better goaltending? Like, what's your take on this team? Because to me, I still think there's lots of time for them to turn this around.
Absolutely, Ezzy. I'm not writing the Montreal Canadiens out, and I absolutely believe that, you know, when the season ends, that they're going to be in the playoffs, that this is a playoff team. You know, they're missing Josh Anderson. I don't know his status for tonight. He obviously got hurt. That accidental slew foot by Dylan DeMello has now knocked him out for a few games. I really liked what Josh Anderson had brought to the Habs. To me, he's the kind of player they've needed. And, you know, he was bringing it. You look at the offseason moves they made, right? Like, Marc Bergevin hit all the right notes. Tyler Toffoli's got, what, 14 goals? I mean, Jake Allen's been pretty good as a guy that can spell Carey Price. I mean, even on the blue line, like a player like Joel Edmondson, I think, was a nice addition there. So I like the moves Montreal made. You know, maybe their red-hot start almost set the bar too high. Like, I don't think they're elite, that I don't think they're a top five NHL team that they kind of look like the first few weeks. But I also don't think they're the team that's just won two out of their last 10 as they head into action tonight. I think they're somewhere in the middle is where that Habs team is. And, you know, to me, having now seen kind of the league unfold here, you know, Toronto looks like they're kind of the cream of the crop. I see Montreal and Winnipeg as kind of the next tier. Edmonton could be in there, you know, but they have so many holes still when it comes to defense, when it comes to goaltending still. But to me, like, those are the class teams, and a team like Calgary, they're just scraping to kind of get into that top four mix. Be interesting to see with the addition of Daryl Sutter, if that is enough to kind of do it. Vancouver, they're out of it. Ottawa, they're out of it. So, you know, you look at the division right now, Toronto's kind of punched its ticket. Like, it's really four teams fighting for three playoff spots, and the Jets right now are kind of sitting prettiest of those four teams.
No question about that. Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on all of our social media platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, however you want to find us. You are watching the show live right now. You know Mike, of course, for his work with the Winnipeg Free Press as a columnist covering the Winnipeg Jets.
Okay, Mike, I'm not going to ask you to take off your Howard Chuck Strong hat because it's too nice a hat, so I'm going to let you leave that on, but I'm going to ask you to put your prognostication hat on. We're just over a month away from the trade deadline. Do you see the Jets making some sort of move? And do you see this because of the quarantine, because of what they did with Pierre-Luc Dubois and what they had to go through with him and sitting? Do you see them making the move sooner rather than later?
I do. I mean, I think if any team, I saw like there was talk the other day about the Leafs, for example, and where they might make an ad, and the idea that they actually have, they get a bit of a break in their schedule coming up soon, that would almost make sense if they wanted to maximize the number of games that an addition could play, even with the quarantine, that it would almost make sense. I think that that's next week is kind of when some folks thought made sense. So the Jets, we know they don't have a whole lot of a break anymore, right? They're going to be playing almost every other day from here until early May. They've kind of had their little breaks already, and they have a real busy schedule, especially here in the month of March. So I don't know that there's a time where you'd say, well, here's the perfect opportunity to strike. But yeah, I mean, we know the Jets have a little bit of cap space, not a lot. But when you prorate it, for sure, there is room to make an ad. And to me, guys, I mean, if I'm looking to make an ad, it has to start and end on the blue line. Like, I don't think this team needs to add anything necessarily up front unless there's an offer you just simply can't refuse. But, you know, for the Jets, they could absolutely use, I think, a blue liner that you could potentially plug in to maybe the Tucker Pullman spot, if somebody like that was available, and I don't know necessarily who that is. I know my buddy Kenny Weed, you know, he's talked about Matthias Ekholm as a possibility, and certainly that would be a real nice fit if the Jets could make that work, and a Nashville team that looks like they're going to be sellers, absolutely. But so, you know, I think the Jets do have room to move, and I think they would have the will to move. I mean, again, we'll see what happens with Toronto this coming week. They actually play Toronto, what, 9 times still before this season is over? Like 9 in the last, like 30 whatever games is going to be against the Leafs. So, but, you know, if the Jets truly feel, and I believe they do, that they can get out of this division, I mean, that puts you into the Final Four, guys. And, you know, if ever there is a year to maybe feel like you'd want to load up, I think you have to be careful. If I'm the Jets, I'm not giving away another first-round draft pick, kind of been there, done that. But if you can find a team that is just looking to get out of a contract, the Jets have some prospects, they have some assets, and I would look to Kevin Cheveldayoff to potentially make an ad, especially on the blue line.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. You're listening to, we're live on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you want to find us. That's where you can find this show live each and every Saturday morning. You know, Mike, obviously the overtime success has been tremendous for the Winnipeg Jets. Do you think other teams are going to maybe start to mimic what Paul Maurice has been doing? Or is it just a function of the Jets having so much upfront firepower that it almost makes it impossible for other teams to replicate that to the same extent?
You know, first of all, other teams should be replicating it. Absolutely. And I think they are, or at least we're starting to see it. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I believe Montreal, for one shift the other night, did throw out 3 forwards.
I think they started with 3 forwards, if I'm not mistaken, much right. Like the Jets did, and then that quickly fell by the wayside.
It was almost like Dominic Ducharme went, oh, so we're going to play that game again, and tried to match it, and we know how that turned out. I don't know if you guys caught it last night. Chicago and Tampa played what might have been the most exciting 5-minute overtime period I've ever seen in my life. I was watching it as it happened. It was just nonstop 2-on-1s, back and forth, back and forth. Somehow neither team scored. It went to a stupid shootout. But, you know, so I was watching because I thought, I wonder if they'll try this coming off what the Jets just did. They didn't. They had a blue liner out there. Now, granted, you know, Chicago's got Duncan Keith. Tampa's got Victor Hedman. Like, they have a couple of their best players. Arguably, their top 3 players are defensemen, right? I don't know that you can make that argument about the Jets, although Neil Pionk's been really good, and he was the one defenseman who got a shift the other day. Like, I was curious. Right. We were wondering, because the Jets had ended the previous 2 overtimes literally on the first shift, so we never got a chance to see, well, what would this look like the rest of overtime? Well, we got a glimpse now the other day, right? Three, a 3-forward rotation. First time, the second time. then a quick shift with Kopp, Perreault, and Pionk. Then you guys get off the ice. We're back to the forwards again, and they rolled that three more times until they won the game. But, yeah, I mean, it's a copycat league, right? We see teams copy other teams and things they do all the time. And to me, this is something, you know, especially in a short season, these extra points in overtime can be oh so valuable. And the Jets may be onto something here with what they've kind of rolled out.
Mike, wanted to ask you about Paul Stastny. You know, obviously coming off of a tremendous game on Thursday night, as you pointed out on Twitter, all the goals. Well, Matty Perreault also pointed it out, but you know, all four goals coming from, you know, players born in Quebec. And you know, after the game, Paul Maurice was fielding questions, and you know, he mentioned, you know, everybody wants to play with Stas. You know, he's just one of those players that seems to make everybody else around him better. And obviously when the Jets acquired him, you know, it was, you know, widely considered a really strong move by the Jets. But is it possible that maybe we underestimated how versatile of a player he is? We know that he's playing on the wing, but really, right, it seems like you could put Paul Stastny on any one of those top three lines, whether it's, you know, center, left wing, right wing, and you know exactly what you're going to get out of him. He's going to, you know, excel whatever position he's playing.
Yeah, first of all, Ezzy, the all-Quebec thing, I mean, it bodes well for the Jets playing there. I wonder what it means for Ontario next week. I guess Mark Scheifele better go off, because I don't know that guys like Dylan DeMello are going to score a whole lot in their hometown next week.
Maybe get Cole Perfetti back in the lineup.
Yeah, and Logan Stanley, right? Mark Scheifele, no pressure on you, but you might need to carry the load next week. But yeah, I mean, Paul Stastny has absolutely been, I wasn't writing him off by any stretch this year, not like maybe Matthew Perreault, but I did wonder what we were getting, what the Jets were getting in Paul Stastny. You know, 2 years older, I don't think he'd say he had a great season last year with Vegas. And you worried naturally about what the Jets were getting. They're a steep price for sure, in terms of his cap hit, albeit just for 1 year. So you thought, okay, well, even if this doesn't really work out, it's something they can live with. Well, I mean, this has gone, I think, better than anybody could have imagined. There's a lot of game left in Paul Stastny, and the versatility, as you say, has been key. He makes those around him better. You know, Paul Maurice had that interesting comment the other day saying everybody wants to play with him. And that's pretty telling, right? That says that he's got the respect, the admiration of his teammates. We know he's a great leader, you know, good in the room, but more importantly, he's good on the ice, and he's doing some real special things for the Jets on a team that, you know, we all talked about their top five coming into the year, which of course included Laine. You can sub Dubois in for Laine now. Well, they really have a top six with Stastny, and I'd say they have a top, you know, seven or eight now with guys like Mason Appleton and Andrew Kopp. And heck, even Matthew Perreault and Adam Lowry, like you go 10 forwards deep. I don't know that you could find any roster in the NHL right now that their 10th forward would be as strong and as valuable a player as Winnipeg's 10th forward is. But that's the reality of what they have.
You know, Mike, we're getting a lot of comments on social media. You know, I have to ask you, where can I pick up, you know, one of those little fires like you, little fireplaces like you have behind you there? Because that's a nice little setup.
It is. And so... Funny thing, guys, my wife got this for Christmas for me. It gives off actual heat. Like, it's not just decorative, although you can make it just, there's a button on the back that actually, it's like a space heater. And I'm in my basement office. It gets very cold in the basement office. So it's not just for aesthetics, it's actually for comfort. And I must admit, as I'm sitting here writing some days, and I turn this baby on, I get so, I almost want to have a nap at my desk because I get nice and warm and cozy. And it really spruced up the place. I can't remember where my wife got it. I believe she ordered it online somewhere. But yeah, it's a nice addition to the McIntyre abode, that's for sure.
The real question though, Mike, is can you roast marshmallows on it?
I've tried and it was very messy. And wow, the answer is no. Although... So a couple of weeks ago, I made the mistake of grabbing a popsicle. Don't ask me why I was eating a popsicle in like January. And then I got a phone call and I had the popsicle laying on my desk and I had the fireplace on. Well, you can imagine what had happened to the popsicle by the time that I got off the phone. I did not get to enjoy that treat.
No, Mike, just to ask your thoughts on the Jets have finally sent down David Gustafson and Christian Vesalainen to the Manitoba Moose. Gustafson played last night. Vesalainen's day-to-day. He could play today, or he might be back for the 17-game homestand for the Moose coming up next week.
That just sounds so weird.
I know. I said to the guys earlier, I said, if I'm still alive by the end of that, it'll be interesting. But are you a little surprised it took this long? Because, David Gustafson talked about it after the game. He said, it had been a month since he had last played for the Jets on February 4th and played. And he had said that he was tired and, playing his first game back. And given, obviously, now there's situations here that you have to take into account, right? When the teams aren't in the same city or aren't close, you have to factor that in because then there could become a quarantine issue if you can't just kind of drive them right to the next location. So that obviously factors in when the teams aren't in the same city. But are you a little surprised it took them this long to kind of get those guys down to the Moose? Because, again, we saw with Gustafson yesterday, power play, penalty kill, big minutes. And that same thing will happen with Vesalainen.
First of all, I read in the Free Press today that Vesalainen played because that idiot McIntyre wrote. And in my defense, Paul Maurice said that Vesalainen was playing last night. And I foolishly, Dave, thanks to you, you actually pointed out late last night. So we're getting it fixed online. But the paper edition said that Vesalainen played because he was supposed to play. Obviously, he didn't. I am a little surprised because, I almost figured when the Moose were on this 8-game road trip, when they didn't send them down kind of early in the road trip, I just assumed that they felt that they couldn't do it until they were back home. That it was just going to be too convoluted to get them there, as you say, Dave, with the quarantine. But the fact is, they've now done it at the tail end of this road trip, which makes me wonder, well, why didn't they do this sooner? They haven't had to dip into the taxi squad with regards to their forwards. And even if they did, to me, it would have made what they just did here. They swapped Yona Luoto out. That's the way to use your farm team and your taxi squad. Just rotate guys in and out. And I'd like to think, they should be doing that even now or next week. I really hope they do that with Logan Stanley and even Nelson Noje. Nelson Noje does not deserve to spend the entire season practicing. Get the guys some games. And so, you should be finding ways to just move guys in and out. And I know it's not easy, but they just proved now that it can be done. And it probably should have been done earlier, I guess, better late than never. Good on those kids for getting now some game action. And hopefully that sort of thing continues so that if and when they are needed by the Jets, when the injury bug inevitably hits again, they'll have guys that are fresh and ready.
Mike, one last question for you. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If the expansion draft was tomorrow, it seems to me that the Jets would be protecting, and they could only protect one of the two, they would be protecting Mason Appleton over Jansen Harkins. How surprising to you is that statement to hear on March the 6th, given how last year ended for the Winnipeg Jets and the confidence that Paul Maurice seemed to have in Jansen Harkins at that point?
Well, first of all, Drew, congratulations on scooping my column that I'm writing tomorrow for Monday's paper on the expansion draft. I'll give you a double byline on it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am surprised a little bit because, you look at the way maybe last season ended. Mason Appleton has a very unfortunate season, that ridiculous football injury in Regina. And I thought that really kind of, not only did it take him out of the lineup, but even when he came back, he just didn't look necessarily right all the time. There were flashes for sure, but I don't think we saw the consistency that you'd maybe like. Meanwhile, Jansen Harkins was absolutely trending up as the season ended last year, right? And even carrying over into the bubble. So, if you had asked me when the season began, if it was an either or, I probably would have suggested it would be Harkins, not Appleton. Well, now, no offense to Jansen Harkins, again, extremely deep lineup that he just can't get in right now. And I still think Jansen Harkins is an absolute NHL player. And if he's the guy that Seattle gets, they're going to get a good one for sure. But absolutely, you can't leave Mason Appleton unprotected. To me, he's the most improved player on the Jets. And I guess Neil Pionk would maybe be in that equation, but I thought Pionk was pretty good last year as well. Mason Appleton, his game has grown a ton. And you wonder if there's even more there to get from Mason Appleton. And so, you know, for a Jets team that potentially could lose Adam Lowry next season, depending on his UFA situation, I don't think you also want to lose Mason Appleton, right? He's been a very effective part of your top nine. And so to me, it's a no-brainer at this point. You got to protect Appleton.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. The Jets in Montreal later tonight to play the Habs. You can read all about that in the broadsheet that is the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, always appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
You bet, guys. Enjoy the rest of the day. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Mike. There he goes, Mike McIntyre joining us on the program. Everybody, take this opportunity, stretch your legs, pour a cup of coffee. 2 minutes from now, we will be back with more Jets talk, talking about the potential of the Matthias Ekholm acquisition. And if not Ekholm, who do the Jets need to acquire, if anyone? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more coming up momentarily live on social media. And we're back. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on social media. Of course, Dave and Ezzy couldn't be bothered to be back in front of the camera in time. You literally have 2 minutes. I couldn't time it out any better, and neither of you guys could sit down properly or do whatever you needed to do in the 2 minutes. You have to be late to the show. Where is your professionalism, gentlemen?
I had to go to the bathroom, Drew, and it takes more than 2.5 minutes. So.
And then I had to clean up after him.
Yeah, you have to clean up after him. What is he, a dog? Well, actually, you know, that's probably not a question.
He's a big dumb animal.
He is a big dumb animal. It definitely is. Anyways, yes, we have commercials on the program now for those wondering at home. You won't have them very often. You don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to shut the stream. Just a quick couple minutes so that we can take a break and stand up and stretch and everything else.
And thank our sponsors.
And to thank our sponsors, exactly. It is the sponsors that keep this program going each and every week. And along those lines, this segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. Pardon me, for over 30 years. I'm shortchanging them. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Curbside pickup, delivery, whatever you need, get in touch with them online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Happy belated birthday to Aaron. It was Aaron's birthday on Thursday, so I was talking to him Thursday, so we got to get that in there. Happy belated birthday to the big man.
There you go. Very nice of you there, Ezzy, to wish him a happy birthday. Let's talk about the chatter surrounding the Winnipeg Jets and the trade market and the name that's at the forefront of all those conversations so far as of late. Matthias Ekholm of the Nashville Predators, a player certainly that the Jets are familiar with given their relationships in the Central Division, a player Jets fans are aware of. You know, Matthias Ekholm, you know, he plays the left side, or he's a left shot. He has some experience, particularly last year, playing on the right side. Is this a guy that the Jets should be going after in the trade market ahead of the trade deadline? And yes. I guess an addendum to that is, do the Jets need to acquire somebody else on the back end in order to maybe fill some holes on the defense?
Yes, to both. And, you know, Matthias Ekholm, it's kind of timely for us. He's got 4 points in his last couple games, but... You know, Ekholm has been an underrated defenseman for a long time. It maybe wasn't until, you know, 2017, 2018, when the Predators were top team in the Western Conference, boys, that he was really getting his due credit. And that has a lot to do with the fact that you've got Roman Josi there and Ryan Ellis, right? A couple of good defensemen. And I think, you know, one of the things we should mention here, and our good buddy Ken Weeb of Sportsnet mentioned this in his column, you know, there is a chance that, you know, if Nashville has Ekholm, he might not be a defenseman they protect. Because obviously Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, those are guys that you're going to protect. But then Dante Fabbro, a really good young defenseman, you guys know that I really like his game. You know, he's a guy that you're probably going to want to protect too. So I think that's a consideration. But when you consider that he's got 1 year left on his contract, I believe it's at 3.75 or something close to 3.75. I mean, that's really nice cap number. And you know, not only are the Jets potentially going to be interested or already interested in Ekholm, because we know that, you know, Chevy is aware that a guy like Ekholm could be out there. I mean, there's going to be other teams. You know, Boston has been linked to Matthias Ekholm. We know that, you know, Boston's defense, you know, is certainly not as strong as it was in previous years, even though the Bruins are, you know, right at the top of that division. So I think there's going to be a whole list of teams. Ekholm is a guy that can give you 20 plus minutes a night. He can chip in offensively. He's not a guy that's necessarily going to chip in as much offense as a guy like, you know, Neil Pionk, but he is a guy that, you know, he has pretty, you know, underrated offensive game. And, you know, he's a guy whose defensive impact is very high. So he can play that shutdown role. He's a guy that, you know, you're not going to expect to put him on the power play, guys. I mean, we know Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey are the two defensemen that they're going to put out on the power play, but he's a guy that can easily fit into your top four. And maybe that means a guy like Derek Forbort moves down and becomes a third pairing defenseman. As Drew mentioned, you know, Ekholm's a guy that can play both sides, even though he's a natural left shot defenseman. So depending on what you have to give up, and we'll get into that here, but I know we've got a lot of good chat happening here, you know, on social media about, you know, what you could potentially give up for Matthias Ekholm. And, you know, it's possible that the team might have to give up a first round pick. If it's not a first round pick, it's going to be, you know, a prospect or, you know, a player and a prospect. So you're not going to get Matthias Ekholm, you know, for a low price, especially considering you've got that 1 year, you know, left after this season.
Dave, what would you do for Ekholm? I mean, would you, you know, would you give up a first and a prospect for him? You know, we know that that's pretty much the going rate now for defensemen. We saw what Toronto gave up a couple of years ago for Jake Muzzin. You know, is Ekholm worth giving up a first round pick, you know, for to acquire? Plus, you know, I don't know if it would be Christian Vesalainen or somebody in the Jets prospect system.
Well, I think what it comes down to, Drew, and we've talked about this a number of times, is what is this team thinking they are? Is this team a win-now team? And when you look at the roster, you would say they are. So I think it's great to have first-round picks. It's great to have to be able to restock your cupboard. But at the end of the day, if you look at what the Jets have, their defensive, they've got five defensive prospects right now on the Manitoba Moose. So defensively, although I don't think those guys are going to be impactful this year, those are guys who are going to have, I mean, some obviously could with Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, but the reality is those are guys who are going to be coming down the line and being impactful for you next year, the year after, Declan Chisholm, Leon Gavanke, Jonathan Kovacevic. So those are, like I said, five defensive prospects that you've got. Now, forward-wise, they don't have as many deep prospects, right? You've got David Gustafson, who's a, you know, Adam Lowry mold type player who's defensively extraordinarily responsible, 20 years old, you know, fit like you wouldn't believe. Pascal Vincent was raving about him yesterday after the game, talking about just how smart a player this guy is. So to me, he's got a player who's got a lot of upside. Christian Vesalainen, you know, we saw what he was doing over in Liga this during the break, during the pause, sorry. And then when he came back, Paul Maurice was raving about Christian Vesalainen and what the change in his game. And we're seeing that a little bit, obviously, with the Jets this season. And hopefully we'll see that again continue with the Manitoba Moose. And then Cole Perfetti, right? So then you don't have a tremendous amount of depth, though, forward-wise. And that's probably an area the Jets are thinking to restock, because even when you look at some of the guys they have overseas, or if you look at the guys that are, you know, in college right now, they're not the high-end prospects that some teams like to have and be able to, like I said, moving forward, pull back into the lineup. So that to me is the concern with the Jets, is that, you know, do you have a lot to trade? Can you afford to get rid of it? But at the same time, if it's going to provide you with a defenseman who is going to solidify your top six, essentially, then how can you not do it? Because that's an area of weakness, obviously, for the Winnipeg Jets. It's something we've talked about before the season. It's something we've continued to talk about throughout the course of the season. So I do, especially with the way the draft has been this year. I mean, these are a lot of kids haven't even played. So it is going to be chaotic. And I mean, look, we've talked to people who have insight on the scouting, and they're prepared. But at the same time, you know what I mean? Like they're prepared based on an imperfect situation. And I think that allows you to have that latitude to say, especially for the Jets, if you think about it, if they're going to be a top 10 team, essentially from a points perspective, what's that draft pick really going to end up being? Right. And so again, don't get me wrong, I don't want to malign it, because the Jets have turned late draft picks, you know, in the teens or in the early 20s, they've turned them into good players. So I'm not saying that they couldn't. I'm just saying, I just don't know that you can afford not to make a move if it's out there. to improve your defensive team for a major push with a goaltender who's a Vezina winner, and the offensive group that you have. If you can solidify this defensive group with a draft pick or a prospect, again, I'm one who's usually loath to say get rid of them, but I think you kind of have to for the way this group is composed.
Yeah, Ville Heinola is not being traded as part of a trade for Mattias Ekholm, first and foremost. I don't think the Jets have any interest in trading Dylan Sandberg, but it's possible that a first-rounder would have to be included. And I think, you know, this is the debate that, you know, we've been talking about going back, 4 years, guys, back to the, 2017-18 season, right? Like, you have to give up something significant. And if you look at what the Jets have received when they've given up first-round picks, it's almost always worked out, right? And the most notable example is the Paul Stastny trade in 2018. So
counterpoint, though, Ezzy, the Kevin Hayes acquisition didn't do anything. By the playoffs, he was playing a fourth line center for the Winnipeg Jets. So as good as the Stastny acquisition was at the trade deadline, you can't talk about the Stastny one without referencing the Hayes one, which just didn't work out.
Yeah, now,
I'm not saying it wasn't worth trying, but it certainly didn't work with Kevin Hayes.
No, it didn't work. And you're right, Drew. And, you know, that is a risk you take. And when the Jets have the ability, you know, to say that you have these first round prospects, pardon me, Sandberg's not a first round prospect, but Dave mentioned, you know, you've got some really good prospects, you know, including, you know, guy like Declan Chisholm or Johnny Kovacevic or Leon Gavanke. So, you know, maybe those are players that you would move. So I absolutely think that, you know, this is somebody, and you know, again, I go back to it, Ekholm, this is no secret. It's not like, you know, the Jets are going to be the only team interested in Ekholm. Somebody's going to have to give something up significantly. And, you know, he's not the only defenseman that is available. You know, we've talked about Brandon Montour in previous weeks and a guy like David Savard, who's a right shot defenseman. David Savard, guys, is someone who has been really effective playing with Vladislav Gavrikov on that second pair. We know that, you know, Seth Jones and Zach Werenski, that's your top pair there for the Columbus Blue Jackets, or at least it used to be. But the point is, David Savard has been kind of a staple there in the top four. So he's another guy.
Let me just mention, so David Savard is a pending UFA. He's a pure rental if the Jets were to acquire him from Columbus. I mean, and obviously we know so far this year, the Jets and Columbus do have a history of being able to work together to accomplish a trade.
Right. And, you know, David Savard, I would say, is more likely going to be a third pairing defenseman. I mean, he could be a second pairing defenseman, but the point is you wouldn't have to give up as much to acquire David Savard as you would to acquire Mattias Ekholm. So there are other players out there. I mean, we've seen, you know, Frank Saravalli's, you know, latest trade bait board, but you know, I think that's what, you know, Jets fans should be looking at here, you know, as we, you know, lead up into the trade deadline. We've got about 5 weeks to go here, but, you know, defense has got to be the number one concern. You know, I was looking at the advanced stats on Natural Stat Trick, and, you know, the Jets are still, you know, giving up, you know, the second or third, I forget, most high danger chances against. You know, when you're talking about expected goals for percentage, you know, the Jets are second worst in the league. So that's the, even though the Jets are second in the North and they're looking really good right now, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have someone like Mattias Ekholm, a really good defender on the team.
Look, I mean, depending, I think the beauty of Ekholm and acquiring Ekholm is, one, he's under contract for a very reasonable amount next season. I think, like you said, the $3.75 million, which is, you know, for a top four defenseman, is basically, you know, chump change. And, you know, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you know, the way you're looking at it, with the offense that you have, if you can add a defenseman, and if it costs you, I mean, I don't say this lightly, if it costs you a first rounder and it costs you Christian Vesalainen, well, right now, I'm not sure I necessarily see a clear path to Christian Vesalainen being a full-time regular top six forward on this Winnipeg Jets team. It seems like the top six is pretty well set going forward, and even with the caveat that I think the Jets are going to re-sign Adam Lowry, the top nine seems pretty solid with Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton there now. So if the cost to acquire a top four defenseman is a first-round pick and a guy who you don't see a clear path to necessarily having regular playing time in your top nine, then I think it probably is worth it. And Ekholm is a guy who is going to add a dimension on the Winnipeg Jets defense that they don't necessarily have, you know, with his size. And I mean, I know that Forbert has size, but Ekholm, you know, he's got size. He can move the puck well. got a bit of a mean streak, and he's got playoff experience. It makes a lot of sense to me that the Jets would be, you know, quote unquote, all in on trying to acquire Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah, and I think there's a good article in The Athletic today from Murat Ateş talking about 9 potential trade targets. I've linked it in the morning papers, so if folks want to go to thelegalcurve.com, they can click on that and read about the different trade targets that the Jets could be looking after. And I think you're right, Drew. Again, like I said, I'm not one for willy-nilly trading away, but I think at some point you have to figure out, what are you? Are you a team that's good enough to compete for the Stanley Cup? I mean, as he just outlined, some disconcerting numbers. So I think there's some warts on this Jets team. Quite frankly, I don't think there's any NHL team that's perfect, right? No, there's a lot of teams that we looked at through the course of the season. We're like, oh, this is going to be an amazing team, and they haven't been yet. So I don't know that there's ever been a more go-for-it year, really, if you think about it from the Jets' perspective, in terms of adding that defenseman that you think, again, the Jets have had that sort of, you know, and it's not surprising, but they've had a glut of young forwards, prospects coming into the lineup. And then in the next few years, they're going to have that glut of young defensive prospects coming in. So it may not be an issue with Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, and, you know, one of like Declan Chisholm. I think Declan Chisholm, again, I said this from before he started playing pro hockey, and now after watching him, I think he's going to need some time with the Moose. I don't pencil him in for the season this year. I don't even know about next year necessarily, but Declan Chisholm, I think, is a guy who has the skating ability to play in the NHL. I think he's got the head. I think he's got to figure out the pro game. I think that's why you have these prospects playing in the AHL. But I just think to myself, you know, there's going to be that missed opportunity because your forwards group is aging out and your young defensive core is coming in. So to me, if you can get a stopgap measure for that, again, look, the reality is this, guys, you have to pay a high price sometimes. That's just the fact of the matter. I mean, sure, you'd love your team to fleece somebody else and get them for a steal. But the truth is, when there's a bidding war, especially towards now, when teams are, to your point, guys, the Bostons, the Philadelphias, the teams that want to compete for the Stanley Cup, you've got to be cognizant of the fact that they're also out there sniffing around. And so, you know, I just think like you have to, it's not easy to pay a high price. And I don't know what the price would be, because I think that's a function of negotiation, obviously, and a function of how many teams are being spoken with the respective GM. But I just think like you have to be willing to say, what is this team? Is this team good enough with a Vezina goaltender, with the offense they are? If we make an improvement on defense, can we compete for the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, and you know, just looking through Murat's article here, you know, I hadn't read it, and he actually thinks that of these 9 targets, David Savard might be the best fit. So obviously, you know, great minds think alike. But you know, looking at some of these players,
Murat's going to go edit his article immediately.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, some of these players are definitely less attractive to me. Like, you know, I look at a guy like, you know, Rasmus Ristolainen, especially, you know, with his contract, he's making over $5 million a year. Not really interested in Ristolainen. And a guy like Ryan Murray's been a healthy scratch for the New Jersey Devils, I believe 4 games in a row here. You know, like we've talked about Brandon Montour, you know, is he that much of a significant upgrade to me? Like Brandon Montour is a depth defenseman. So the other one to me that's really intriguing is Colin Miller. And Colin Miller is a guy that, you know, you probably would say is going to be a second or third pairing defenseman, but he's very good defensively. And he's a guy that can chip in offensively. What did he have, 40 points with the Golden Knights, I believe? And obviously you're not expecting him to put up huge offensive numbers. But, you know, when I look at these, you know, and Vince Dunn as well is a left-side defenseman. So Vince Dunn is a guy that intrigues me a little bit. But when you're talking about, you know, whether it's David Savard or you're talking about a guy like Colin Miller, I mean, these are good defensive defensemen. And I think Drew makes a really good point. I mean, the Jets are, what, 3rd in the league when it comes to goals for?
Yeah,
this is a top offensive team. I don't think anybody, you know, is expecting the Jets to go after, you know, a top offensive defenseman or a top 6 forward. I mean, the Jets are good there. I think, you know, Chevy would always be willing to, you know, add to his depth. But really, this is what we're going to be talking about here for the next 4 or 5 weeks is these kind of, you know, second, third pairing defensemen. And these guys are available. So, you know, Colin Miller is a guy that has a year left on his contract. And Murat talks about that. You know, that could be something that's appealing to Chevy as opposed to a rent-a-player like David Savard. So David Savard, you know, Colin Miller, Brandon Montour. I mean, Matthias Ekholm, let's be honest, is the creme de la creme. And I think it's going to be tough for the Jets to acquire him because I think a team like the Boston Bruins is going to have a lot of interest And there's going to be many others that are looking at that natural Predators team and they're saying, okay, what do we have to give up to David Poile to get Ekholm? Ekholm is an excellent defenseman.
And a lot of talk in the chat about how the impact of acquiring a guy like Ekholm would impact the expansion draft. And I think it just means the Jets would protect Ekholm and expose DeMello. And I don't think that's necessarily a big deal for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't think that's going to keep them up at night, the possibility of losing Dylan DeMello to the Seattle Kraken. Now, obviously, they'd prefer to keep DeMello, and would not be a surprise if they swung a trade like they did with the Golden Knights to ensure that they don't pick one of their, quote-unquote, desired players that they want to keep on the lineup. So, but if it means you lose a guy and all of a sudden your defense has got Ekholm and the three defensemen you're protecting are Ekholm, Morrissey, and Pionk, I don't think the Jets are going to be upset about that whatsoever. I think that's a pretty good problem to have. You know, this Nashville team, it certainly looks like they're on the verge of a rebuild. Their season has been a disaster. Their offense is atrocious. The only good thing they have going for them is that defense. But, I think at this point in time, the for sale sign has to be hung in Nashville. And that's what's going to lead to all these teams going, really starting a bit of a bidding war for Ekholm. But I think it's going to be sooner rather than later, especially with the 2-week quarantine, as far as we know, not going anywhere from the Canadian team's perspective.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, Nashville's season has not gone very well. As you mentioned, Drew, they're not mathematically out of it, but they're certainly not in a good position chasing other teams already, right? And, Mikael Granlund's another guy whose name is out there. I mean, there's certain players that Nashville's not going to trade. They're not going to trade Roman Josi. I doubt if they're going to trade Philip Forsberg. I mean, when you talk about, Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene, you're going to have to give up a lot when you're talking about the team's top two centers, right? So certainly Ekholm's in that conversation. We mentioned Granlund, and I'm sure there's going to be some other players there, and it's just unbelievable because the Predators were such a top team for so many years, but we've talked about their flaws. They've been exposed many times. They've been exposed by the Jets in the playoffs, and they've just been a team that's been kind of one of those tweener teams, that's just good enough to squeak into the playoffs but not go anywhere. So it's just a weird situation for David Poile to be in because they've been a perennial playoff team, but there's no doubt that they're going to be one of those teams that unless they go on a nice, 5, 6, 7 game winning streak, they're absolutely going to be a seller and they could start selling off, earlier rather than later. Because as you mentioned, Drew, when you're talking about the quarantine, teams aren't going to wait until early April to pull the trigger.
Exactly right. Keep the conversation going in the comments, and it's a great chat, and we appreciate all of our Winnipeg Jets fans and all of our Illegal Curve community that's joining us from all around the world this morning, seeing people from outside of Manitoba, of course, outside of Canada. So nice to see each and every one of you on this Saturday morning. So keep the conversation going in the comments. I want to sort of shift our focus again back to the upcoming week between the Jets and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael Trakos, the national hockey writer for Post Media, is going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk about this upcoming Jets Leafs series. How much do you think that impact or the acquisition of Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to have an impact on these three games against the Toronto Maple Leafs? We saw what he did to the Leafs last year in the playoffs, in the bubble, where that was the best Pierre-Luc Dubois. Dominant, really better than Austin Matthews, better than Mitch Marner, and really, certainly one of the reasons why the Blue Jackets were able to get past the Maple Leafs. So, how important do you think Dubois' performance is going to be against the Leafs in this coming week? Anybody?
Me? Yeah, I think one of you. I think that, when you're talking about these upcoming games, there's no doubt that, Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to factor in big time. And you mentioned his performance against the Leafs in the playoffs last year. And, I'm expecting Dubois' game to take, another step. And, his shooting percentage is crazy high right now, with the Jets 4 goals in 8 games. But, when you're going up possibly against Austin Matthews, who's absolutely ripping through the entire league right now, that is going to be a measuring stick just for him personally. So, that line has been good. Didn't necessarily think, they had their best game on Thursday night. They were a little bit quiet except for maybe overtime. But there's no doubt that, these games upcoming They're going to depend on Pierre-Luc Dubois. And, you know, he's playing his natural center position, which we knew that it was going to happen eventually. And I think that line has shown us, you know, many times that they can, you know, produce offensively and, you know, not just score off the rush, but, you know, score in different situations in the offensive zone. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to also see how Mark Scheifele goes up against, you know, that Toronto Maple Leafs team. Mark Scheifele, you know, it's been a little bit quiet for him. You know, it's not like, you know, he's been playing bad by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, these are games where if you take one shift off or two shifts off, this Toronto team can come at you in waves. And we know the record. We know how many goals they can score. Their power play is absolutely lethal. You know, the goaltending is obviously, you know, not as strong as Winnipeg's, but Frandy Anderson is having a good game. And even, you know, a guy like Michael Hutchinson has come in and given them some good goaltending. So, you know, these games are going to be close. I'm expecting these to be close games. And I don't think the Jets are at all intimidated by the Leafs. I don't think they're intimidated at all by the standings. I think right now they're a very confident group. And that includes Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's now, you know, got into, what is it, seven games now, eight games for the Jets. And I think he's feeling like he's finally, you know, back into the groove of the season after going through that 2 week quarantine.
And I would add to Ezzy's point with respect to Pierre-Luc Dubois, the fact that he's now back in his natural center position. He's had two games and plus a little bit when he was moved in mid game to the center spot. And I think that's important. And, you know, he's got to get comfortable playing with Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor. But I mean, I think there's potential there, right? I think there's a guy who's, you know, you've got two guys who can absolutely fly throughout up and down that ice. And I think Pierre-Luc Dubois is a guy who's going to play heavy. And I think he's going to rise to that opportunity. I think, you know, that's one thing we forget. He wasn't playing his natural position and he's coming off that long layoff. And I think as he feels more comfortable within the Jets system and with his, you know, his line mates and gets that comfort. And that's what I was talking about earlier in the show, this idea that the Jets have banked points. So while you don't want to lose games, it's more important to ensure that you have lines that are comfortable playing with each other, that you have guys. And again, things can happen. You can have an injury and you're going to have all that thrown out the window. But the truth is you really want to get a stretch of games where Nikolaj Ehlers, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Kyle Connor play together for 10 games straight. And, you know, Paul Stastny goes up, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler plays with them 10 games straight. And, you know, Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton play together. And I think if you can get that, if you can ensure that you have, I think that's more important. I don't get me wrong. We're in Canada. It's hyper-focused on hockey, and the focus will be on the results for sure. But I think if you're the Jets staff, you really just have to be more focused on what is the impact of your lines and how are they working together, and are you able to keep them together for a significant stretch to allow them that opportunity to gel, to form that chemistry? Because it's clear that, like I said, it's not there yet. It will get there. A guy like Paul Stastny can do it because, A, he's a veteran of so many years in the NHL, and B, he already had the familiarity with his Jets team. So even though he wasn't a winger, I mean, we've talked about how versatile a player he is and how what kind of pro this guy is. Pierre-Luc was not, you know, a 12-year vet in the NHL. So, again, he's going through his first ever trade. He's adjusting towards playing in Winnipeg with these players. That, to me, is the bigger factor, is what is it going to look like? So is Pierre-Luc Dubois have it on him that he has to go and single-handedly destroy Toronto the way he was able to in the playoffs? I don't think so. I think it's you want to see, more importantly, that Pierre-Luc Dubois is playing well with Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor, and forming that chemistry. And if he is, then realistically, the Jets are going to have a good chance of beating the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know, of all the games, I mean, I am looking forward to it. I mean, it is our illegal curve question of the day. You know, is it a measuring stick game to play against the Leafs next week? And I do think it is. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, the talk or the knock against them for so much of the season has been, yeah, but who have they played? Yeah, they've beaten up on the Ottawas, and yeah, they've beaten up on the Vancouvers and the Calgarys and some of the weaker teams in this division. You know, you're playing against the Leafs team that's at the top of the NHL standings. And whatever you want to say about, you know, the North Division, you know, the Jets can only play the schedule, of course, that and the teams that they're scheduled against. So I do think the Jets are going to consider this a bit of a litmus test. And if the And I would be surprised if the Leafs did to the Jets what they did to the Oilers. I don't think the Oilers don't have they don't have the offensive depth that the Jets have. So I would be surprised if it's as one-sided. Now, I'm not saying the Jets are going to win all three games, of course. I'm not saying they're necessarily going to win, you know, win one game. But I would be surprised if it's as one-sided as you saw between the Leafs and the Oilers this past week.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. And it's not a question. Like, I realize it's our IC question of the day, boys, but there's absolutely no question in my mind, is this a measuring stick? I mean, any team that's playing the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I realize that, you know, this is a unique year in that, you know, you're not playing interdivision, right? But I think, you know, it was the same thing a couple of years back with the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? Like, they only lost, you know, what was it, 12 games the entire year. So any team that was playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, it was a measuring stick game because they were absolutely steamrolling the rest of the NHL, right, with 60-plus wins. So that's not the issue here. I think, you know, what you're not it's not an issue, but it's not a question in my mind. It's absolutely going to be a big test for them. But, you know, the Jets are only 3 points up on the Oilers. So the Oilers have lost three games in a row, but they have a chance here to separate themselves a little bit, right? And, you know, the Oilers are obviously, you know, looking to get back into the win column, and they're going to be playing the Calgary Flames tonight at home, and then they've got the Ottawa Senators on Monday. But, you know, the point is that you're still trying to win games and, you know, keep the pace up, right? You're still trying to hang on to second and potentially even catch the Leafs. And obviously, you know, 7 points is not going to be easy to make up. But if you're able to win a couple of these games, you know, then it's obviously going to get much easier to catch them. So,
well, you know, plus the games in hand. I mean, the truth is, if you factor in the games in hand, let's say, for argument's sake, for conversation's sake, the Jets win both the games in hand they have on the Leafs. So all of a sudden, instead of being 7 points behind the Leafs, you're only 3 points behind the Leafs.
Exactly. I mean, right.
You know, the number looks big right now, and then you factor in the games in hand. Now, I think, I mean, truth of truth, I do think Toronto is probably better than the Winnipeg Jets, at least in the regular season. We know that for the Leafs, it's all going to come down to the playoffs. They've been a regular season team that chokes in the playoffs. So, you know, I think it all comes down to when the regular season concludes. But I do think that this week is still going to be interesting for the Winnipeg Jets. If all of a sudden the Jets are competitive, or at least the equal of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think you're going to hear a lot more about the Jets in terms of maybe the word contender is thrown along a little bit more than we've seen so far. You know, everyone's been saying, yeah, but with the Jets record.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it's a mini playoff series, and it's a possible preview of what we're going to see in the playoffs, right? Because I think getting, you know, to the Western Conference Final is most likely, I mean, right now it looks like, you know, it's either the Jets or the Leafs that you would say is the favorite. Maybe Edmonton's in that conversation. Montreal could still be in that conversation. But the way they've played, you know, over the last 10 to 12 games, I think they've fallen out of that conversation. So absolutely. But, you know, it goes back to what I said right now. I mean, the Jets just want to keep these wins coming. They want to keep up with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They want to cut that deficit, and they want to keep that separation between themselves and the Oilers, because even though that the Oilers, you know, are coming off of those three losses to the Leafs, I mean, this is a very dangerous team. I think, you know, the Oilers are a very unique team. I've said that before, right? Just for the simple fact that they have two of the best offensive players, two of the best all-around players in the league. And then obviously, you know, you've got some other players there that are pretty decent, like, you know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, Kaylor Yamamoto. But we know that defense is, you know, one of the weakest defenses in the North Division. So Edmonton's a bit of a unique team. I think Montreal, I still believe they're going to finish third in the division, but absolutely. I mean, these games are crucial. I mean, they're not must-win games. The Jets aren't, you know, needing these games to get over the playoff line or anything like that. These are games that, you know, that they need to win if they want to keep pace with the Leafs. Because look at it like the other way, Drew. If the Leafs win two of these three games, it's going to be very tough for the Jets to catch them.
To what Mike McIntyre said about an hour or so ago, that if the Leafs all of a sudden, you know, expand the lead, it's almost like they're home free at this stage, this early stage in the regular season. Our buddy Michael Trakos from Post Media is going to join us momentarily. First, this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at Zappia Group www.illegalcurve.com.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.